We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. It's Wednesday morning after the Timberwolves lost to the New York Knicks 96-88. I'm joined by Britt Robson of MinPost to kind of at least start by talking about these two games post-Christmas for the Wolves, where they beat the Boston Celtics on Monday night. They lose to the Knicks tonight. Very shorthanded in both games. And Britt, I was just thinking we can kind of start the conversation by talking about what, if anything, from these shorthanded Wolves, the players who are playing, what, if anything, has been relevant to kind of the rest of the season?
Very little. let's be honest. This is...
I thought you were going to take a different path. I thought you were going to just start heaping some Nate Knight praise.
Well, people are operating in a an unusual circumstance that doesn't really apply and won't apply going forward. It's kind of like holding a marathon swim meet in a swimming pool going back and forth rather than a lake or an ocean where you swim for miles and miles or something.
Did you prepare that metaphor?
No, I have no idea. Don't you think it's a good one though?
Analogy? I don't really get it, but I'm picturing the water.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is there are certain circumstances where certain players can probably play well for a short period of time in that. Let's say somebody to continue the weird metaphor, somebody's really good at bouncing off the sides of the, doing the turnbacks or whatever. That's good for a while.
Flippity flips.
That's good for a while, and it gets you ahead for a while. But if you're a marathon swimmer, eventually the people with the best lungs are going to swim best, So all I'm saying is if you're in this environment where you have unusual circumstances. Malik Beasley's a perfect example of this right now. He's being exposed for being able to do one thing either well or not well, and that's his role. And and if there isn't enough surrounding stuff around him, he's going to be even more dependent on sinking long-range shots. And if he doesn't do it, he's going to be considered trash. If he does do it, he's going to be considered invaluable, and so roles get outsized, downsized. We can love the fact that Jaden McDaniels is putting together a really nice offensive game for himself over these past few days, maybe even the past couple of weeks. But when Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell return, and when he starts to lead a proper second unit with second unit expectations, I don't think that kind of offense is going to sustain. I think that he's the kind of guy who needs a lot of high usage and needs to have a certain environment in which he plays that I think that's most of that's going to go away.
So is maybe the question whose role right now is most similar to what their role is going to be when the roster returns? Is that maybe the most relevant?
Actually, that's actually a great way to phrase it. Yeah, that would probably provide more meaningful conversation.
But who is that? I'm trying to even think about that. It's like Jalen Noel, right? I mean,
actually, Jalen Noel has probably is another really good example. You're on your game today. Because Jalen Noel is right now the spark plug off the bench. The guy who kind of is in the D'Lo role of captaining the second unit, if you were. You know?
Right. That one seems the most same because I just kind of go down the list. I'm actually going to push back on the McDaniel stuff a little bit too.
But okay.
I think Nathan Knight, his role that he obviously has right now is not going to be the role he has once the roster's back together. Certainly Greg Monroe. And those have kind of been, along with Jalen Noel and Jaden McDaniels, have been the players I think have played best over these two games. Jordan McLaughlin, too, I think has been decent, but he doesn't really have.
Again, a guy that likes high usage.
Yep, exactly. I think with McDaniels, I'm a little bit more encouraged by what we've seen from him over these four or five COVID games, because I think we did start seeing a bit of a shift prior to the players starting to go out with COVID. And what you were saying right there, and what some of your questioning was last night, was like, you asked Jaden, you're like, can you do this once, you know, the big three returns? And I think we saw him start to do some of this stuff.
Some of it, right.
While the big three was there. And I don't think with him it's ever like a big swing from, I don't know, like even in these games where he has as much bandwidth as he could possibly want, right?
There's
nobody out there for the Wolves. He's still not going to take that much, right? His usage goes up by 15% or something relative to what it was before. And so I don't know. I think with McDaniels, I'm always looking at how much is he able to do within himself, which is a pretty specific kind of limited, muted skill set. And I just like how, beyond even the defense, which was really good against Julius Randle last night,
right?
I like how we've seen a little bit more from him offensively, a little bit more assertiveness without the sloppiness that sometimes comes when he turns up the volume a little bit.
I understand what you're saying. I think that the sloppiness goes away with repetition. That's my point. My point is that I think that
makes sense.
If he gets 8 shots a game, he's going to be more sloppy with the first 6 than he is with the last 2 or whatever. But I do think there is something about his game. Put it this way. When McDaniels is really aggressive on offense, my first gut instinct is that that's the wrong thing to do. I just don't feel like he has the...
But isn't that a product of who he's around and not him individually? I mean, I don't...
I'm even seeing it, you know, I'm even feeling it, you know, during these games, you know, during the games when he has the right to take those shots. I guess what it really comes down to is I still don't have a lot of faith in his offensive menu, you know?
That's fair.
I just don't feel like, I think his handle is either not very good or overrated, depending on how you think about him. I think that he still remains a flyweight. He gets knocked around just because of who he is. It has nothing to do with his want to. I mean, Pat Bev was the latest to just, you know, people who know him best are just openly admiring of the fact that the guy is a dog. He's a real competitor. And it seems a shame that, especially after he had that flu, he just gets treated like a rag doll sometimes. And that's what made last night fun, you know, in some respects. I thought Finch kind of oversold the idea that Randle went at him. I actually thought that Randle bailed him out throughout the first half. You know, I mean?
Yeah, Randle would, like, go at him until he got to 10 feet. And then he would do one of those jumping passes back out to the perimeter. I thought Jaden did a pretty good job on him in like hand combat, you kind of, you know, like an offensive lineman. It sounds kind of weird to compare to an offensive lineman.
That's exactly talking about? Yes, I do. I think, and I actually think that is where McDaniels, to your point, has improved the most, and maybe is a takeaway from this COVID time, is that he is learning how not to foul. And some of that has to do with the fact that he's moving his feet in a position. He's getting that separation so that he can use his hands in a way that doesn't look like a foul. It's when he tries to use his hands when somebody is right up against him that he has trouble, or when he's been bounced away and he's reaching back for somebody. But there's a middle ground where his hands are really good, where he's not bounced away and he's not leaned into. And he was able to get that middle ground with Randall some last night. So I think that's a very good point.
You know what I'm concerned with him about is his three-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's the 36.5 three-point shooter he was last year. Now, he's 26.5 this year. But, I mean, when you just watch him shoot, like, put it like this. Oh, one, I don't think his form is all that great. And so when I watch him shoot, yeah, I think we're probably talking about like a low 30s guy. What do you think? Okay, well, are we 33 games into the year? Is that right? What do you think Jaden McDaniels will shoot from three from this? Well, let's just call it in 2022, the rest of the season.
The rest of the season from now?
From now, yes.
Somewhere between 32 and 36%.
I think I'd take the under.
Uh-huh. Well,
I think that's what's concerning to me. Mm-hmm. About him, given how much of his limited offensive role is about that, just the spotting up there. He clearly has it kind of reminds me of last year when Ryan Saunders would just talk about how Josh Okogie just if you're catching it there, you got to let it fire.
Right. Know? I know. Yeah.
And it's just like, I appreciate having faith in your players, and I understand you kind of have to do that. But at some point, when a player isn't shooting well from three, doesn't seem like he's exactly a knockdown shooter, I have frustration with this team over the past few years, including this year, where there's just so high three-point volume. And I go, I don't know if that's ultimately the answer, is just for a guy like McDaniels to still be, what's he shooting? He's still shooting 3.5 threes per game, which is almost half of his shots.
Mm-hmm.
So put glass half full, or more optimistically, I'd like to find more ways for him to be maybe like catching off the DHO and moving north-south rather than just that pure spot up thing in the corner above the break. I just don't think it's going to end up being that profitable. And it certainly hasn't been thus far this year.
Well, there's a lot to react to on that. I would say I want him to take open threes more than contested threes. And part of that is because he's a legs shooter. He's somebody who really needs to be set. He's one of those guys that seems to shoot from the bottom of his calves up through his body. And that requires open shots. It's like a minor version of Gorgui Dieng in terms of the windup, although Gorgui's windup is more upper body. But the succinct point is that I think McDaniels needs time to get his three-point stroke in rhythm. And I could be wrong. It's just because have been occasions where he's hit some contested threes that are these big rainbow things that I never thought would go in. But I feel a lot better when he has time to get that off. And what I would like to see him be is, there was a guy who was a commenter on my MinPost article who, after I ripped McDaniels in my last piece, who said that the comp on McDaniels should be Dorian Finney-Smith. And I thought that was a really interesting idea, because I do think that Dorian Finney-Smith is somebody who can hit a three, especially a corner three, but concentrates on just being a scrappy defender. Now, of course, the difference is about 35 pounds. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith is about, goes about
right.
250,
he's a big dude, yeah.
About 215, 220. He is 6'7", so, I mean, it's kind of a cop that way.
Were we talking about this last time, how Dorian Finney-Smith looks even taller than 6'7"?
Exactly. We were.
Yeah.
I mean, I was actually shocked. He was almost cat's height. And so,
yeah.
Who knows, you know, with these things. But I love the cop in that you don't expect Dorian Finney-Smith. If he gives you 20, it's like, whoa, you know, like, what, that was a bonus game, you know, or whatever. I want to see Jaden get like maybe anywhere from 9 to 12, you know, sure. As kind of his game. And in the meantime, concentrate on locking down wings. Now, Randall, for some reason, is an exception. He defended Randall really well last year, too, in there.
Well, because Randall stopped short.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He doesn't use his physicality all right. The way. He loves to pull up for that mid-range. You know who I don't think wants Jaden McDaniels to be Dorian Finney-Smith? Chris Finch.
Oh, I know. Well, Chris Finch has visions of Jaden McDaniels that he may turn out to be right.
Right.
But as an all-around player, he sees an offensive upside for Jaden McDaniels that I just don't see. I don't see it. And he knows a hell of a lot more about the game than I do. So I think that's a whole
hopeful
thing.
I think it's because we don't see it as much, and I'm assuming maybe some of the listeners too, because like the ball skills aren't clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like McDaniels is, you know, he's gangly. He's pretty upright. He's kind of got like the Wiggins frying pan handle where he looks like he's just kind of smacking the ball rather than really like cupping it.
Yep.
But to somebody who's smarter and sees kind of basketball further and deeper than we do, I think somebody like Chris Finch views those things as adjustable over time.
Uh-huh.
And something that can be developed. I do think it's good that Jaden McDaniels is a 6'9", 6'10 kid who did grow up playing a guard type of role.
Right.
He's not like a big who's added, you know,
right.
This to his game.
But so doesn't that mean though that he should already have developed that skill? Plus
it does. Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's been my just purely observational experience that handle is one of the few things that really can't dramatically improve. Mm-hmm. I don't know of a lot of players who suddenly become really good with the dribble. I think you either have it or you don't, to some extent.
I remember Joseph Blair, who was going to coach the summer league team, when we were asking about Jaden McDaniels a lot in the summertime, he was like, we need Jaden to be able to catch the ball and take one dribble. And that is step one, right?
Right.
And so that's probably, like, it's probably going to be a progression. And
right.
But the kind of the, I don't know, the Chris Finch line about Jaden McDaniels that pops is from your one-on-one with him, where he talked about him being comparable to Scottie Pippen.
Right.
But what he said in that was Jaden has a foundation and can stack skills on top of that. So that's what I think we're talking
that's
about.
That's a really cool quote. First. And you hammered on that at the media thing last night, which was kind of fun to hear the answers.
Because I don't really know what the answer is. I asked Finch, I kind of made
turning
it. I was
the corner
to
thing was a really, yeah. That was a cool insight though. Why don't you expand on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was trying to frame the question as positively because right. I think Jaden McDaniels has been the most consistent Timberwolves player through this decimated roster
right.
time.
Yes.
And so I just said, you know, you've talked about Jaden stacking skills onto his game. What things have you seen him stack this year and what things would you like to see be stacked? And Finch didn't mention anything that he has stacked, right? He was only like, well, we need him to turn the corner. And I don't remember what the other thing he said was, but it's almost like Finch saying, almost expressing some frustration with Jaden's season as a whole. I don't think Finch is frustrated with Jaden has done these four games, but he did have higher aspirations for McDaniels through this first almost half of the season. So I think him saying that is kind of what we're saying, or at least what I'm saying, is maybe a fewer threes and a little bit more at the basket. Because I think we have seen that when we see it swing it back to him on the second side, he does have a pretty quick first step. He goes a long ways with that step. So if it's just one guy to beat on his way to the rim,
right,
he can do that. And then when the big comes over to contest it, he is so tall, he is so long that he can kind of like gangle finish at the rim.
Right.
And so that is the more attractive part of his offensive game to me. I wanted to mention these here too. I just pulled up his 3-point shooting. Last year, he was 41% from the corner, 33% from above the break, and 36% overall. This year, he's 29% from the corner, 27% from above the break, and 28% overall. So the area he can or has shown that he can make up some ground, and it's just the easier three, is the corner. I mean, that's pretty concerning that hasn't even made 30% of his 50 corner threes at this juncture of the season.
Well,
these things probably tie together. Hit some more shots, then you can do a little bit more off the bounce.
And also, I do think that, like Chris Finch, Jane McDaniels thought this was going to be a banner year. I mean, he came in, he didn't leave Minneapolis unless it was to go to Vegas over the entire offseason, practically. He stayed local. He worked out all the time. He sculpted his body. I mean, when we saw him at Media Day and he said he put on 10 pounds, we believed that and thought he's getting ready to do something, you know? I mean, this is going to be something. Right. And all that, you know, summer league stuff. Yeah, I think it really helped that he had a couple of Bulldogs on the, you know, playing, you know, all this is relative to Vegas competition. But McKinley Wright and Isaiah Miller both were, you know, guys who, you know, were Bulldog guys on one end, but pretty much let him, you know, have the rock to do what he wanted with, you know.
And he played the three, man. I mean, part of the reason why Jaden McDaniels has played poorly this year is because he's played 60% of his minutes at power forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing, again, Chris Finch admitted the other day that as soon as I got Pat Bev, he envisioned Pat Bev in the starting lineup. Well, that immediately means Vando wasn't there because he always had McDaniels in there. But that also meant that McDaniels was going to have to be the four. And that just isn't going to work in the NBA. I just don't think – I think this McDaniels at power forward thing, which I think is pretty well – dead now, although I think that it'll get resurrected on, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And Finch is always, he said Torian Prince was going to be a small ball five. He said Jake Layman the other day was working out as a small ball five. I think he has these cool concepts. It just doesn't have the personnel for it, but he never says Jade McDaniels is going to be a small ball five, you know, because he knows, you know, that's, you know, his small ball five is going to be somebody who moves in and out, you know, sticks and then leaves, you know. And Jade McDaniels, I think, is just, you know, he can't do that. So, you know, we spent a lot of time on him, and I do want to not close, but sum up my feeling. I'm a big Jaden McDaniels guy. I mean, I wrote a fawning piece on him last year. I have been disappointed with his play this year. I don't think anybody who was a big fan of his last year and saw the kind of preseason and summer league he had didn't expect more from him than what they've gotten this year. That doesn't mean that at the age of 20, he'll be 21, I think, in September, or maybe May or something like that. But anyway, he's not yet 21, that he's going to be some kind of leveled out guy.
Right.
And Dorian Finney-Smith, I think, is not. I mean, somebody might hear that and go, oh, that's really not much of a ceiling, especially if you're comparing him to Scottie Pippen. But that's the kind of guy. Dorian Finney-Smith is a poor man Scottie Pippen. You know, that is the kind of guy that a team like the Timberwolves with a big three or whatever, you need somebody, you need a Jay Crowder type. You need a guy who, a Miles Bridges type, although, you know, he's begun to, and the other Bridges, so I always miss.
Yeah, but it took some time. I mean, it took both of those guys some time.
Exactly.
Both of the Bridges.
Yep.
So So I think to that point, it's Jaden finding himself. It's finding parts of his game. It's playing the right position.
Right.
I think that's where
we'll start to see growth. Yep.
There are some bigs on this roster who have been playing more. They are probably better options at the power forward. Let's take a quick break and then talk about the new bigs who have been playing.
Today's episode is brought to you by 20 by 20 Solutions, a Minneapolis-based technology consulting company that works with your business to help you build and sustain success. A great front office puts together a winning team with a coach who can put together a winning strategy. When leadership does its job and it all comes together, that means success. Success in business isn't any different. Business leaders need to find the right mix of technology, strategy, and talent to make things really work. And that's never been truer for growing companies. 20 by 20's team has helped grow companies from thousands of customers to tens of millions by helping businesses across a wide range of industries, from consumer technology and healthcare to manufacturing and even human spaceflight. Reach out to Clark and Ben, who are Wolves fans and fans of this show, by emailing them at team@20by20solutions.com. That's T-E-A-M at 20x20solutions.com. And their team will review your needs and help you put together a plan before you need to make any commitments. 20 by 20 Solutions, technology, workflow, architecture, strategy. They're your sixth man on a winning team.
All right, we are back with Britt Robson of MinPost talking about the post-Christmas Timberwolves, I guess, looking at what's happened with this shorthanded roster as the roster has been decimated by COVID. And in this intermediate time before Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell, and stuff are back, but specifically Cat, you know, there's been a huge opportunity at the center position, which is very rare. You know, in a normal game, we got Cat playing 35 minutes a game. So
right. It's
kind of been probably one of Naz Reid's great frustrations
right. Over
the course of his career. There's never, ever more than 15 minutes available for him to play. On Monday against Boston, Naz Reid was also out in COVID protocols. So Nathan Knight got the start. I think he's kind of become one of those kind of like Vando guys where people love the effort. Plus, he's shown some skills that do appear, you know, to be replicable and something you could see sort of squeeze into the rotation. I think it's an interesting it's interesting that we got both games,
right?
The Boston game and the New York game. Knight showed some more of his warts in the game against New York, while also kind of shining in the Boston game. Does that kind of, I guess, more full universe of what Nate Knight has done, how does that impact where you see he can and can't play in this team immediately and going forward once Cat's back?
Well, if you remember, I think I told you preseason that there was going to be a time in the season where the seas would part and Nate Knight would show up. You know,
I think you told me that at Summer League.
We were in Vegas,
and you're like, this guy's going to play at some point this year.
Which
maybe isn't that hot of a take in a COVID season. Like,
yeah, that's true. Although, I mean, what I was saying is that the kinds of things that he can do, he's a mucker, and muckers are almost never bad. I mean, they're desultory. They can be like, they can be not the best option, but they usually aren't. Oh my God! You know what in the world is he doing in this game? You know, get him out of there. The worst thing that I think Nate Knight could do to hurt a team is to get them in the penalty early, because he is a fouler.
I was going to say that's one of the warts for sure.
But I really like the idea of a guy who his fouls are not desperation fouls usually. And if they are, they're the kind of desperation fouls of somebody who is face up with an obviously better guy and is just conceding. But it's not usually like he's reaching out because some guy is blowing past it. Or it's not, you know, like he's totally out of position on a rebound.
No, it's not understanding the block rules.
Yeah. Well,
it's kind of similar to Jade McDaniels.
Not wanting to understand using the body. Not wanting to understand the block rules in his case.
Well, he looked like Cat last night in his
disillusionment
with the referees.
And I do, it chafes on me when a guy with not enough clout to do this is constantly going over to the refs and trying to agitate for his case. I mean, it does him no good to be whining about something. You know, everybody should know what this league is about. You know, I mean, if the refs haven't seen you very much, then they assume that you're a scrub and they don't give you the benefit of the doubt. If they see you, more and more they see you, the more and more they realize, hey, you know, this guy may have the kind of skills that that bang, bang play was not a foul. He was in position or whatever. Sure. And Nate Knight doesn't understand that. And for somebody who seems so amenable to logic, I'm convinced that his parents are doctors and lawyers. Just by the way he acts with people, you know, he's incredibly respectful. He's incredibly fluent in terms of just expressing himself respectfully, but also kind of without being subservient oriented.
Also kind of cat-like.
Yeah, but without the histrionic melodrama, you know, I mean, you know, you don't hear a lot about Nate Knight saying, you know, that, you know, the issues of Nate Knight are kept to Nate Knight. What he's doing is essentially trying to put his best foot forward as a as a model citizen, the way your well-heeled parents would say, you know.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, yes, that's what he's trying to get across. I think some of it is performative.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, I think so, but yeah, I can see that.
That's not a good or bad thing.
No, but I guess what I would say,
when you talk to these guys every day, you go like,
yeah,
you become,
you know where the bullshit lies.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And he's just very like diligent, I guess, is like the
he wants maybe to the convey but he wants to convey non-controversy. I think that's what I'm saying. Cat wants to wants the court controversy.
Yeah. Maybe enough Cat Nate Knight.
I'm a stickler on this point.
We were talking during the game about this idea of, you know, is Knight going to be able to play power forward next to Cat, basically? Or is he going to be able to play power forward when Naz Reid is out there in the second unit? I mean, that is when we're talking about these players playing right now and can they play going forward? It's a lot more about, you know, finding a fit and how can they adjust their skill set to find that fit. And on this team, on this roster, again, when Cat's going to be playing 35 minutes a game at center, for Nathan Knight to play, he needs to be able to play some four. And you asked Finch about that after the game, about all of these bigs. Well, he did, but you were basically like, hey, of these bigs you have now, the four of them, Cat, Naz, Knight, and Monroe.
Exactly. Like, who can play the four?
Who can play power forward? And he's only said
he chose
Naz.
Naz! Are you kidding me? I mean, that was like, Chris Finch has a wonderful way, because I'm usually near the end of the queue now, just in terms of the way we sit in the media room and everything. I'm on the opposite aisle or whatever. But the bottom line is I'm oftentimes getting to ask a late question, which you're very familiar with on Zoom, because you're more at the end of the queue on Zoom. But almost invariably, like the last thing I say to him in terms of a question, he says something that just makes me scratch my head, and then the whole thing is over. You know, I mean, it just you go, wait a minute, what the fuck? I mean, did he just really say that among Naz Reid and Nate Knight that Naz Reid is the guy most likely to be the four? I mean, that's absurd.
Maybe that means the most likely to play alongside Cat.
Exactly. I would think that really must be the agenda there, because I mean, true, Naz Reid can hit a corner three, and if you're and I do notice that, especially with role players, most of the time Finch is talking offense.
Yes.
And so that can be my only explanation, because Nasri cannot guard Forrest to save his life. I mean, that's just a fact.
Yeah.
If you put Nasri out in space, go for a Coke, man. You know, the Wolves are going to lose 10 points in the next 3 minutes.
Well, it is with all these bigs. It's like, except for Greg Monroe, he's like the only one who's like actually a one. Yeah, where he actually guards fives and plays five.
Exactly.
Like, Cat plays four, guards fives. Vanderbilt plays five offensively, but guards fours on the other end. Nas is backwards too. He's more of an offensive four, I think. Right. Defensively, he has to play the five. And then Nate Knight is kind of the one you're like, oh, well, what is it? And I think he's kind of like that too, where he's kind of being forced to play the five, guard fives, when he has more of a four offensive skill set. And all of this is, a lot of this has to do with the fact that these guys are undersized. They're more one-way players, all of them. And, you know, it just becomes, it becomes a bit problematic to puzzle together. Optimistically looking at Nate Knight potentially playing going forward, I'm intrigued to see some of the Knight next to Cat minutes, if that can happen, because it's, that's been something I've been interested in to see with Cat and Nas for a long time. But honestly, I've probably kind of been wish casting that to some extent, because I'm a Nas fan, and you're like, oh, he can shoot it, like he can shoot it like Vanderbilt can't. But it just ultimately, the Cat Nas minutes have never worked. They just they haven't. There hasn't been a ton of them. They haven't worked. So Knight is kind of like another shot at it, right?
He's a modified Vando.
He's a modified Vando, but the modification that will be critical
is the good one.
Is the ability to shoot the three and to go to space. Because as good as Vando's been this year, there have been these extended stretches of time where you're like, it would be nice if they didn't have to play him right now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And in those moments, when that comes up over the course of this year, because it will, it would, if everybody was back on Friday for Utah, there would be a 12-minute stretch in this game where you're like, damn it, I wish Vando and Cat didn't both have to be out there right now. Right. The Wolves really struggle to score because of Gobert and this setup. And you go, that would be a moment where you're Chris Finch and you go, well, maybe let's go with 6 minutes of Nate Knight at the four next to Cat. And we're just going to have him spot up. We're just going to have him spot up in the corner.
Here's what I want to know, because I also think that Nate Knight working with Monroe against Boston, and let's face it, Boston just had a bad game on defense as well as offense. But Monroe found Nate Knight a lot on cuts and on plays. But he lines up. He's more of a back-to-the-basket guy, and he's also in a little closer than Cat usually is, which makes the spacing a little less easy to work with, but also makes the cut more effective, because players assume they've got it covered and they don't, you know? And so I wonder if Cat can hit a cutting Nate Knight, or whether that's that he just doesn't have.
The lurk is still going to be there, man. The lurking, though, like, part of, and you know, credit to Greg Monroe, passed the ball really well in both of these games.
Right.
But he is in a one-on-one situation without even any help. They're not sending even a second big.
Right.
With Cat, there's either the hard double or always, at a minimum, the lurking second big.
Right.
And the lurking second big is going to limit Cat's ability to get to his shot, because if Cat starts to attack, here comes the double. But the lurker also takes away the cutting lane. If there was a lurker, and during Monroe's games, those cuts to Nathan Knight, Jade McDaniels, Jake Layman would not have worked as well.
Good point.
And so that's why
it can't work. You're right. It can't work. Nate Knight has to hit the corner three, is what you're saying.
It just
or a 16-footer, you know, just inside the arc.
Right. Something, a floater game, whatever. This is going to be a consistent problem, because every single team is going to continue to guard Cat this way, or some iteration of it. And really, the way to beat it is going to be this team hitting shots. And it goes back to what we're talking about with Jaden McDaniels. That can't be 26%. It's going to go back to Torian Prince. You need to make more than 30% of your threes.
Right.
Okogie, if you're going to play, you got to be able to shoot or hit in, you know, an open three. Vanderbilt, too. That's why, again, we have this conversation all the time. He needs to take one or two of them a game. It's just this half-court offense remains terrible. And this is the reason. So I wish the answer was cutting.
Or just putting it on the deck. One thing about Nate Knight is I think he goes strongest to the hole.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a way to, you know, you
he
get,
could maybe finish through
not
big,
Gobert,
more than,
but I would say half the center.
Yeah, I almost said Gobert there, and I was like, oh, Lord. But there are, you know, I don't know, if it's a Robert Williams.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's going to be – he's going to have more success due to his physicality in that way. Let's just do this. Who should be in the rotation right now if we got all the team back?
Ooh,
we got the starting five.
That's – unfortunately, that's a – I mean, I'm willing to try it with the caveat that it's so interdependent on who's on the floor with you. But
But like, just generally speaking, are we going to say nine-man rotation, right?
Well, first, let's stipulate that the best damn quintet in the NBA should probably remain the same.
Yes. Yeah, that's why it's actually not – it's funny that this is still a complicated conversation when we know that the starting five works as well as it does.
Right.
So we got that locked in. Right. Let's again, assuming everyone's back from COVID.
And let's assume that they go back to D'Lo leaving early. Who comes in?
Right.
I mean, is McLaughlin – has he earned enough to have
those – Let's not start with McLaughlin. I don't think he's I'm a J-Mac fan, but I think no matter what the rotation is, the D-Lo, the minutiae there is, well, and correct me if you don't agree with this. The three guys who should for sure play are Malik Beasley, Jaden McDaniels, and Naz Reid. Do you disagree with that?
I might.
I think that's starting to be a common take that I disagree with. I think some people with Malik Beasley there are now like,
oh, no. I'm actually more Nas. I actually Nas. Like,
okay.
I think that Monroe and Wright offer some real interesting wrinkles.
Knight, yeah.
Monroe might be the kind of guy that, not on the floor with Cat, obviously, but might be a guy who you send in as a second unit guy. I can see Monroe and D'Lo doing some interesting things together.
Interesting. I didn't really thought about that lefty connection. The one thing I'll say about Naz, and again, everyone knows I'm a Naz stan.
Uh-huh.
But we do this a lot, where guys play
shiny
well
new
for
object. Right
for exactly, and I just want to note that Naz has been a shiny object as well,
even if he isn't
a shiny
right.
You know, and there are things right now that Naz Reid can for sure do that Nathan Knight can't do. And there's holes too. There's the defensive things. Can't guard a four to save his life. Shot is inconsistent. Falls over. You know, there are Naz Reid problems. But I just
and he's in a slump, so it's a bad time to talk about him because he's not going to be in a slump.
But that kind of makes it a good time. To talk about him to be like, hey, let's not forget their shiny things.
Right.
Under there too.
Right.
And I'm just not at a point of a good week of Jalen Noel to say, okay, now he needs to be over Malik Beasley, who's a player who has a track record of being a high volume knockdown shooter in this league. And I'm not at a point of saying two starts of Nathan Knight or Greg Monroe out of nowhere all of a sudden indicates that they need to for sure be rotation pieces of this team. I think it's a conversation.
Right.
And even that is high praise to Greg Monroe, that it's a conversation. Yeah.
Right.
That he could be in the mix. But as I'm mapping out a rotation right now, I have my starting five and I still have Beasley, McDaniels, and Naz for sure.
Okay.
In my rotation.
I think that the case that I would make on the Beasley-Noel continuum, because I have mixed feelings about both of them. I think that both have been overrated and underrated at various points. I think that Noel has a better handle than Beasley. His bad defense, I think, is less toxic than Beasley's bad defense.
See, that's what I was going to say. It's, if either of them were defending at all, that makes their case.
Right, exactly. I think that Noel just gets overwhelmed, whereas Beasley just takes bad angles or doesn't understand what he's supposed to be doing sometimes.
Mental lapses.
Yeah, I don't know if they're mental lapses so much as I just think he gets excited. It's almost like an ADHD approach to defense. Hey, there's a guy I need to be guarding. He's right there. You know, I got to get him, you know, kind of thing. But Beasley has all.
I think Beasley is currently a better defender than Jalen Noel is.
I think it's really, really debatable.
He has a better idea of the concept. He has a better idea of the concept. All the other things you're saying are true about Malik Beasley. I'm not trying to praise him necessarily on defense, but the concept, he understands the low man part better.
I mean, I think part of that is because it fits into this ADH thing I was talking about. There's a man going for the hoop. I got to go get him, you know.
But isn't that the whole scheme?
On the low man, it is. But what I'm saying is when it's like a pick and roll and the guy is going to get there and Beasley runs to him anyway, the whole Ricky Rubio thing, you know, which, by the way, is an underrated Ricky Rubio flaw. I do think that Noel does solid enough better than Beasley, which, you know, is which is
what they've been more running here since the COVID ravaging.
And I feel like Noel could be one of those guys that, as his confidence, put it this way, I'm swayed by the fact that for whatever reason, Jalen Noel is beloved in that locker room in a way that I don't think Malik Beasley is. I don't know why, but people love
it's the style of game, man. He's a bucket. He's like that. It's a very attractive skill set to watch. Now, I think, and what sometimes maybe players miss out on, is the like external value of a shooter, you know? And I don't think sometimes the other players understand how valuable Malik Beasley is, even if he isn't making his shots, because Malik Beasley is on the scout, of, you know,
don't leave him alone. If you leave Malik alone, you know, and especially in the corner, then you'll probably go to the bench if it happens twice.
So I think there's some of that, but I'm not saying the gap between those two is all that different. I just don't think they're really, I don't think they play the same position. I think they're extremely different players, which complicates this conversation of choosing one or the other, which leads me to not even want to choose one or the other.
Right.
I'm still giving Beasley minutes. He's the third highest paid player on this team.
And I think in third and fourth in minutes right now.
Right. Sure. Yeah. So it's
maybe even up to second. I mean, he may be
in total minutes.
His total minutes. I mean, he's been racking them up.
That's true. That's true. So I think Noel, for me, is I would add him into the rotation as the as one of the nine guys or one of the four bench guys. And then the real question for me becomes, do you want to play a 10th?
Well, what about this idea? That's precisely why I had the caveat at the beginning of saying I really don't know. What about if the Wolves go small and shooty in the second unit and have D'Lo, Noel, and Beasley all in that second unit?
D'Lo, Noel, Beasley. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's something that Finch would probably like to see.
I mean, what's the defense going to be like?
Well, especially if Nas is on the court, which is why I think that that's one of the reasons I like Knight there or Monroe there, assuming Monroe can protect the rim.
What if the answer here is to switch this like cat and ant play the whole first quarter thing and maybe two of them come in with the second unit?
You know, and I was just thinking to myself, I'm playing myself into a Jade McDaniels at the four by doing that. And I don't want to
do
that.
We don't want that.
I don't want to do that. Right. So it's hard to do. Yeah, it's hard to do.
Hold on. Let me get one more break in here. I want to keep talking about this because I think this is interesting. We'll be right back with Britt.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, back again with Britt Robson of Min Post, talking about the Timberwolves, what we've been able to kind of gather in this time where many Wolves players have not been playing. It actually gives you an opportunity to see what some of these guys look like. We're not just talking now about Nate Knight in theory of what he would fit in with this team. We've now seen him play. We've seen Jalen Noel play 25, 30 minutes a game and have an idea of what that might be able to look like on this team. And that now is, I mean, quite frankly, going to bring up some hard questions for Chris Finch and Mike Anori as they put together this rotation going forward. And one thing I would commend the both of them on, I don't think the rotations have been perfect this year, but what I would commend them on is not being dogmatic with who plays every game and a willingness to say, you know, Torian Prince is playing this night. He's not playing the other night. Josh Okogie's playing tonight. He's not playing a different night. And their ability to do that without pissing off the players. I haven't got a sense from any of the players pretty much all year that they've had, there's been a major frustration with what their role is. I remember Torian Prince talking about it earlier in the year when he had like a couple of games where he wasn't playing, where he's like, well, all these other guys who I'm competing for minutes with are about the same level as me.
Right. I don't think you want to talk to him now. I think that I would be surprised if Torian Prince is as sanguine as he was.
Well, it sounds like what we're getting to with this is that you or we don't think he's going to be in this rotation going forward.
It's really, really hard to make an argument for it.
Yeah.
I mean,
the argument is believing in the 3-point shot that hasn't been there.
And even then, as much as I like Torian Prince, and I do, I mean, I think he's a great, I've said this constantly without ever setting foot in the locker room at a time when it would be really helpful to see it. I do think he's got gravitas with his teammates in a really cool way. And I love the way he takes charges. I love that he tries to do everything right. He's not dumb at all. He's a very smart player on the court. But this is a scrappy team. This team has its identity in terms of being able to scrap. And being able to scrap involves being quick. And he's just not quick. And it's a death knell for him, for me right now. When he's playing well and getting those charges and hitting some threes, you can see how, yeah, you know, he's a net positive tonight. But I just don't think, he's going to consistently, he's not Ersan Ilyasova. He's not going to get like a charge every three games or something, or, you know, he's, and there are just simply better options out there. I mean, Jaden McDaniels, Jared Vanderbilt, you know, Josh Okogie, I would put ahead of him. All three of those guys cover his skill set in different ways.
What about even Jake Layman?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Jake Layman, I've seen enough of Jake Layman to know that you never know what you're going to get night to night. You'll get.
Right.
I would not put Jake Layman ahead of Torian Prince, even though I do think that Jake Layman is more likely to find a home and be a thriving 10-minute guy for somebody than Torian Prince is. Torian Prince is more likely to be a thriving 18-minute guy. Just because Jake Layman, you know, no one, the eye test versus the analytics on Jake Layman is as wide as anybody I've ever seen. I mean, he looks good out there. He's athletic. He does things that you remember, even when they don't happen positively. He's out there flying around to some extent. But it doesn't work out. He's just.
It's worked better in these couple of games he's been playing.
But even then, check his net rating. I mean, I bet you it's not well.
I think it is actually good. It's literally these two or three games. I mean, I remember the Boston game, he checked in, the Wolves went on a 13-1 run. Last night he checked in, the Wolves went on to a 7-0 run. I mean, again, at some point when we're talking about plus minus right. net rating over right. the course of 1 week, like, you know, how much does it even matter?
Right.
We gotta have, and particularly with the specific conversation that we're having of like, how do you fit into this group? And there's only, you know, so many spots available. I don't want the rotation to get to a point where it's 11 or even really 10 guys anymore. But I do think what I'm kind of coming around to, if they're going to keep the same construct of the rotation with the good starting five, with D'Lo coming out so as to play with the second unit, like, I almost do want to see them go to 10.
Right. Has he ever shot better than 34%
no.
from deep?
I don't know. Jake Layman is not a good shooter. That's he is like the antithesis of the cliche white guy. I mean, Jake Layman is a freak athlete.
Right.
And he's not a good shooter.
Right.
Like Jake Layman is one of the most unassuming athletes in the NBA.
Agreed. Yeah.
And still is. And, you know, he's not – There's really some pop to his game. It's just unfortunate that, you know, again, growing up, he was a guy who was more athletic than everyone else. So I doubt he was somebody who was just shooting a ton of threes when, you right. know, when he was in high school. He was a slasher, which hurts right now because that's what this team could use. If he was a high 30s player, then yeah, I think we're talking about this.
We're talking about certainly putting him over Torian Prince.
Right. Well, because like Torian Prince, kind of remember when Brandon Rush was here?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
When Brandon Rush could shoot 40% from three and still not be a positive.
Brandon Rush was a perfect blend of the strengths and weaknesses of Torian Prince and Jake Layman.
Exactly. So give me your. I know there's too much context. Give me who should your bench
starting
four or five,
and then I would say that the three guys who you know are going to play every night include Beasley, Noel, and McDaniels. And then I think you have Okogie, Prince, Knight, and McLaughlin.
Monroe. What about
Monroe? Yeah, Monroe. Well, I mean, I think I'm making...
See, that's what I'm saying. People are going to get pinched.
I am making the decision that Nate Knight, for all kinds of reasons, one being... that I don't mind Monroe being a guy that just gets a couple of 10 days and is like the Ed Davis of this year, you know?
Sure.
Because I do think another vet on the team, especially one that can help Cat on big man stuff. I mean, Greg Monroe is an old man's big man game.
Right.
And to the extent that Cat can learn quietude and, you know, keeping your head, and, you know, Greg Monroe has been through the wars. The guy's played in Russia and Germany. He played for a 2-19 team in Russia and got cut. You know, I mean, after being, he was never an all-star, but a guy who was always regarded as somebody who was going to be something in the NBA. I think he's been through enough of the wars that he could be a great guy for Cat to talk to. And I wouldn't mind seeing him around for at least 3 or 4 weeks. And then, you know, take it from there. If he gets the veterans minimum, you know, when we have to send Balmero back to Iowa, I'm not going to be heartbroken about that. So, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're putting a gun to my head and saying nine guys, I think I'm putting Knight ahead of him in my nine. Because I don't.
That means you're not. So Nas isn't in your rotation.
I don't see it because I want the continuation of style. I don't want McDaniels at the four, which means I need Knight to be the backup four.
Yeah, no, it's hard to pound the table for Nas over Knight. I mean,
what we're saying, I mean, we just got through saying it's hard to choose between Noel's defense and Beasley's defense. Well, in the same way, Nas and Knight each have flaws that are wanting, each are young, each have a really intriguing upside, and each are really cheap. So there really isn't, I think it's kind of more what you kind of like about the game. And I like defense and hard-nosed stuff. And Nas, you know, he's a guy whose eye test is not as good as his analytics when it comes to defense, especially. This year it's a little different, but in the past, his previous two seasons with the Wolves, his defensive rating has been a lot better than you would expect it to be, because I think he gets undressed on a regular basis. But,
yeah,
you know, so if Knight winds up being in, you know, losing out to Nas for, you know, key minutes, I can't complain about it. You know, I mean, it wouldn't be my choice.
I think probably the way to go about it is – You're looking for one of Nas or Knight to show to you, to prove to you that they can do something next to Cat. And whether that's in practice or in a game over the course of a couple of weeks, you try both of them and you're like, is this solving some of our half court problems that we're having with Cats on the floor? Is it working to have Knight be spotted up there? Can we really commit Nas to, you know, to being that? Can we find a way to play some defense without it being zone with Cat and Nas out there?
Right.
Is there anything that works
with
those two together? And to where the shiny object actually makes some sense here is we haven't seen it with Knight. We have seen it with Cat and Nas where it hasn't worked. There's been stints for over a year now where those guys have played together.
And the reason they have to go to zone, in my opinion anyway, when Cat and Nas play together, is the corner three is always wide open if you don't.
Yeah.
And I do think that Knight is much better at closing out.
The Nas is?
Yeah.
I think he tries, maybe tries harder at it.
I think he's faster.
Nas is a little quicker.
Oh, do you?
I was going to say, I think Nas,
wow,
is quicker.
Interesting. We'll have to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, Nas does the thing where he looks like he's falling over as he's closing out. But that is a frustration with Nas, is his feet aren't as good as his athleticism suggests.
And he's a quick twitch guy, whereas Knight feels like a 10-foot guy. I think Knight can get to 10 feet faster than Nas can, but Nas can get to 3 feet faster.
Okay. I like that.
But that means on a closeout of a three, I think that means that Knight can close out faster. Now, I don't know, you know, we'll have to see. But if if you want to run man with Cat and a big in the game, you've got to have somebody who can get that corner guy, because Cat will.
I'd be fine never seeing this play team play zone again. I think they're so bad at it.
Well, and is anybody really good at it though? I mean,
last night was ridiculous. They're in a 2-3 zone, and half the time the guys didn't know they were in.
But you know what? The Knicks were so bad.
So bad.
I mean, they didn't recognize it. They didn't shoot well.
I think that was the Wolves' worst defensive game of the season, and the Knicks didn't score 100 points. I mean, it was statistically, it wasn't the Wolves' worst defensive
their game shot of the selection. The Knicks' shot selection was bewildering. I mean, it really made me lose a little bit of respect for Tibbs as a coach, because why he wasn't just going ballistic on the sidelines. This is a guy who's like control freak, everything about the game. You know, he still hates when another team gets offensive rebounds, but somehow is okay with guys like Randall and Barrett turning down easy drives to the hoop for stupid passes or even stupider shots.
Tibbs' offensive plan has never made sense to me. Chicago, Minnesota, whatever.
Yeah, fourth in the league, though. Fourth in the league in offensive league.
I know.
Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson. That was what that was about.
I just looked it up just in terms of defensive rating. It was the Wolves' second best game defensively in the last 13 games.
Yeah.
Last night. And I thought it looked the worst.
Well, it's because of the level of competition.
Yeah. The Knicks shot 40% from three. I mean,
yeah, and less than 40% from two. You know, who knows why? And they also didn't make any free throws. I mean, what would the the offensive rating is points per possession. When you miss half your free throws, there's a couple of points right there.
That's true. Last thing I want to say on the the Knight Nas thing and the Vanderbilt, and this is something I talk about all the time. This is something you talk about all the time. And there's two reasons why this is just really important, in my opinion, is it has been the biggest problem of the year is finding offense amongst the four or five on this team,
right?
Which is crazy to say when you have Karl Anthony Towns, but the Wolves are one of the worst half court offenses in the league. And it's because they haven't found a way to effectively play 4-5 with Vanderbilt or when McDaniels is out there at the four. So you're not only searching for something in the immediate there to make it work a little bit better. We're also trying to answer a longer term question of, which we've been trying to answer for 7 years, of what the hell works next to Cat in the front court. And, you know, that's why I want to see them try different things. It's why I've always wanted to see more Nas, Cat next to each other. It's why I'm even interested to see Cat and Monroe play next to each other.
Right.
I am.
Right.
Just because then he's playing the four. And I'm not saying any of these experiments will work, but really now with this roster, you almost have and they're all discount, actually probably pretty bad versions, at least offensively, of power forward archetypes. I mean, you got Jared Vanderbilt, the dunker spot guy. You got Jade McDaniels, the small ball four guy, or even throw Torian Prince in there. You got Naz Reed, who's like the ball skills big, who can kind of shoot it. You got Nathan Knight, who's the mucker and the physical guy. You've got kind of like the full complement of like big man skill sets.
But they're isolated skills.
Exactly. That's what makes it hard to answer this. So that's why I'm looking for a week. I'm looking for this works.
You want to know something incredibly ironic, at least to me? Gorgui Dieng would be really nice. He would. He hits those threes. He plays really good defense. I mean, whether in drop or in the kind of pick and roll they're running.
Communication. All five people would have known they were playing 2-3 zone last night if Gorgui Dieng was on the floor.
Right, right. I mean, the guy, what's he making now? Like five or three or something? I mean,
four,
I don't
know. Four, something like,
I mean.
Maybe that is, Britt, maybe like what we're getting at here is, or I don't know, like, do they need to acquire a big?
Well, that's one of the things that I thought was interesting when you were talking about, I think that Mike Anori and Finch, what you were saying is I think Mike Anori and Finch have done a good job of rotations and figuring things out. The guy who I'm curious what he's seeing and figuring out is Sachin Gupta. Because this team is ripe for a situational roster tweak that is kind of a Jenga board in terms of if you add this and you take away this,
right?
This is kind of, it's not a one move move. It's a one move that affects a lot of different moves. It's why I had trouble when you said, let's pick nine.
Yeah, no, it's hard.
You know, some of it is, if we understand, and for the record, you know, when we keep talking about Vando being insufficient, he makes up for it in other areas, and Vando is fine doing what he does.
For sure.
But you're right about the idea that Cat and Vando can't play 35 minutes a game together if for no other reason than Vando would fall out or get killed. You know, somebody would.
Or the offense just wouldn't work.
Yeah, right.
Unless Vando's going to get 6-7 offensive rebounds in the game. And then it's not fluid.
Four steals and they'll get 28 points off turnovers, right?
Yeah, which has been great and has been happening a lot. I think that to the Sachin Gupta question or thought process and all of this, and the idea of adding a 4 next to Cat or a 5 next to Cat, the proverbial Miles Turner question is, if you do add that player, you are going to kill a lot of the Vando role this year, which we both agree has been good, and you're going to kill Naz Reid.
And you are not going to kill the Vando role, I don't think, because
it's going to be fewer minutes. It's going to be
At a guy who's only going to get like 15 minutes. So I think that Vando may drop from 32 to 23 or something.
Okay.
You know, but I still like the idea of Vando giving you.
Wait, so you're saying acquire a guy who's only going to play 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like the Robin Lopez or something like that.
Yeah, be like the super, I mean, well, that's pretty much what Gorgie gets in Atlanta, I think. You know, I mean.
Yeah, oh, the Gorgie, okay.
You know.
See, for me, if they're going to make a move, I'd rather it be more bold. I like a backup Gorgie, Robin Lopez, something like that. Like, I'd rather just still try to figure it out with this group that they have.
Because
do that.
I think that precisely for the reason that you don't want, I don't want to mess with Vando. I think he is absolutely crucial.
And that's what I'm saying. I only want to mess with him if you're getting something that significantly moves the needle, the Miles Turner thing.
But
then
mess with it
and slide him into the back.
Oh, I see. You're talking like Miles Turner size acquisition. See, I don't like that idea.
Disagree.
I know. I just think that's more than the shiny object. That's the shiny bauble. That's the, you know, right. Like that's the disco ball. And what I would say is this is the most enjoyable Wolves team in over a decade. Right. And they're putting together a really cool identity. And it's not an ironclad identity. It involves a cohesive, synergistic scrappiness that another guy may improve, but he very well may not. And one of the reasons he may not is because you're taking the linchpin of this entire identity and it won't be meant this way, but you're punishing him for not being a broader based guy when in fact, he is exactly the kind of role player that makes this identity work. Now,
right.
It could be once this team makes the play-in or scraps to the seventh or eighth seed and gets their ass handed to them or something.
Still, yeah.
And we begin to recover from the sugar high of taking a step forward, which has always been, quite frankly, my opinion. I know it's a minority opinion. I think a 38-win team is not a failure of the current roster. I think, other people do. Other people think that if you have, you know, the whole argument, if you have two max guys and the number one pick in the draft and everybody's humming and you can't get to 500, you know, you got to make some major change. No, I think the teams, Denver, Phoenix, you name it, are continuity teams, and then you wait to know exactly the one guy you need to add. And I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. I think I'm going to predict that the Wolves might do almost nothing at the deadline, which, because I'm not ruling out the shiny bauble Miles Turner type thing. I obviously do think that's a possibility, something like that. But I think that move would be more born out of Gupta trying to like save his job or assert his job than built out of logic of like progressing through continuity kind of linearly as you're talking about. Cause I do think that is what makes most sense with this roster. And at the end of the day, I think that's how Gupta's mind works, where he'll be tempted to make the move to save his job, but I think he will go back to who he is and how he and the teams he's always worked with have pursued these sort of things. And it's with a hyper level of logic, and the shiny bauble thing is something that doesn't make a ton of sense in the idea of moving from the eighth seed to the sixth seed. And now, obviously, there's a lot of different arguments you can make. You say, well, okay, if you get Miles Turner this year and you get to the sixth seed, does that give you some upside to be a three seed, you know, the next season when Turner's in the final year of his deal? But it just adds this additional pressure to everything to move forward at a specific pace, when I think the Wolves are moving forward this season and presumably beyond at a pace, maybe not a fast pace, but it's going in the right direction. Yeah. And you don't need to do anything. You don't need to give up any assets. You don't need to add any desperation to the mix to keep going forward. And that's why I just wonder if this deadline comes and goes, and it's kind of like last year where you go, yeah, they didn't add anything because they didn't want to pay a first round pick for this year's Marcus Morris or whatever.
Right. And here's where I am hoping that Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez
don't get involved.
Well, or at the very least see, first of all, I think Chris Finch, his status around the league and obviously what he's done with his team this year. If he is not first among equals when decisions are being made right now, I think that's a mistake because what do
coaches typically want to do? They want to win.
That's where I think Finch is confident enough in what he's doing that he thinks he can win with this step-by-step approach. Right.
And if he gets overzealous and says, "Oh no, we do need this. We do need to trade."
Then it's on him, and he's the guy.
It's on Gupta, man. No, it's on Gupta. Then to be the bumpers there, you know, if they are this they need to. In all seriousness, like they need to like be the push and the pull of what, you know, what is good for the big picture and what is good for the small picture. And it probably, as always, it comes down to price tag.
Right.
If you can get something that isn't, you know, too expensive, like, sure. We've kind of learned over the past 2 years that to get any player of real that is going to make any sort of difference down the stretch of the season, almost all of those players require trading a first round pick to do. And a lot of time, those guys that you do trade a first round pick for, or a pile of seconds, like those guys oftentimes don't even work out. And sometimes they're Nikola Mirotic and they're not even playing when it's the playoffs, you know, that sort of thing. So,
well,
I don't know.
I have enough faith in Chris Finch to say that if he wants to make a step now, that I would trust it because I do think.
I would trust it if it was approved by Gupta.
Well, and
that would happen. Yeah, but.
And my counter on that is, I don't think it's an equal relationship right now. Nothing against Gupta. It's just that Chris Finch, what he did last year was okay, and people got excited about what he did last year. But let's face it, what he did in preseason, he changed the identity of this franchise. And obviously, it took Pat Bev and signing Vando and everything. But the guys he was talking about, I'll never get back. You know, that press conference, the last time we ever saw Grierson Rosas in an official capacity, aside from that weird twins thing, was when he was at the press conference and Finch at the end of that said, I think we've addressed just about every need we were looking at this summer. And when I talked to him like a month earlier in Vegas, he was widely saying, yeah, I don't know about Paul Ford and I don't know about point guard. And there was Vando and Pat Bev on chairs next to him on the stage. Yeah. And he was a different human being. He was somebody who was saying, I'm going to war with these guys. And I'm okay with it.
Right.
And lo and behold, the two guys that are the most identity creating guys on this team are Pat Bev and Vando. So if Chris Finch wants to tell me how this identity is going to change again in a, you know, and put his reputation on the line, then if I'm Sasha Gupta, I'll push back if I legitimately think it should be pushed back just to give him the benefit of the downsides, but then I'll give him what he wants.
Right. No, it's a good point. And, you know, if Chris Finch is pounding the table for some sort of big change, it will be a big change that as a player who's a starter, which means that player will be breaking up this starting lineup that has not only defined the identity of this team, but has been wildly successful in the minutes they shared the floor. So, you know, that's a good point. And I think further asserts my position, or I think our position, that probably nothing big is going to happen.
And also, I mean, I just want to get this in before we fold out. The cynicism of Wolves fans is really driving me crazy. I mean, I'm the guy. I'm the supposed.
You should know better.
I'm the supposed curmudgeon who, you know, everybody for years and years would accuse me of, you know, pissing all over the hopes of this team and everything. And I saw poorly coached teams. I saw badly motivated guys. I saw guys who did not deserve to be on the floor that were on the floor, malcontents. I mean, this team has had all the diseases that its record indicates. And to piss and moan because Malik Beasley missed, you know, 3/4 of millions of shots last night, and that's why they lost to a bad team. We're in the middle of this weird COVID bullshit. We're in the middle of a cynical NBA policy of everybody playing with strip-mined rosters. It's not a real foundational environment in which to judge the team, first of all. And secondly, they just got through using smoke and mirrors to wax the Celtics the night before on the other end of a back-to-back. And people are choosing now to piss and moan about this Wolves team. I mean, right now, enjoy what you have. This team is on the upswing. They've got an identity. They've got interesting players. No, it's not perfect. I've said all season 35 to 41. I still think that's realistic, provided that COVID doesn't throw us more curveballs. But get a grip. I mean, what are you expecting? Are you expecting this team to be like hosting a playoff series in the Western Conference? This team right now is in the mix, right where they should be. They're actually a little better than what I thought they'd be. And there's some real growth points that have us talking about, you know, 9-man rotations with a starting five that is the, you know, the best in the NBA. So as somebody who has been down on this Timberwolves team for the predominant years of the 30 year I've covered it, this is not a time to be negative about this Timberwolves team, in my opinion.
No, I think, not to defend people, I think there's just a lot of frustration about the whole COVID situation.
And that's legit.
I think that's legit. And then the frustration is coming out kind of sideways, like projecting the, you know, your disappointment on something. But yeah, quite honestly, and you know, knock on wood, I think we're hopefully through this. Like, these games feel to me like preseason.
Right.
And And I have done this long enough too to, you know, trick my mind into finding ways to make preseason relevant. But I feel like this, quite honestly, this 80-minute conversation that we've had reminds me of conversations we've had in September before,
right?
Where we're guessing and checking, and we're picking who the eighth and ninth man should be. And then a month later we go, hey, remember when we were talking about Nathan Knight being in the rotation and something else is completely, you know, has completely changed. This is just going to be a weird blip in the season. And we're going to forget about it.
What did I say at the beginning of this podcast when you asked me what we could do?
I said, not much. No. Exactly. And I think
I hope we've entertained you for 80 minutes.
It remains for preseason. It remains somewhat intriguing.
Exactly. And I thought you framed it really well, actually. I thought, oh, maybe this isn't a waste of time. When you said, the whole thing about we're seeing guys who we theorized about, and we haven't seen Jalen Noel on this big of a stage yet. We haven't seen 8-9 on this big of a stage yet. So there is to that extent. And we haven't seen Jaden McDaniels have the time to develop the usage to get his rhythm back. I mean, all those things might be relevant. At the very least, they're reassurances that there is, you might bump the ceiling on a guy a few more inches as a result of what you've seen.
Well, it is situations like this where Jared Vanderbilt found himself.
Right.
Like, more likely than not, the things that will happen over these couple weeks will be irrelevant, or more of them will be irrelevant than they won't. But one or two things will abide.
Right.
And I hope that's what this conversation has been, is mining for those things, guessing at what they might be. For me, honestly, if I could distill it all down, the two things if I had to bet on right now, it would be that Jaden McDaniels has started to turn a corner within this season and hopefully starts turning more corners on the actual floor, getting to the basket. And that Jalen Noel is, you know, a legitimate bench piece scoring option for this team. I think he is that. And then the things that I think will prove to be fodder that we look back on are, we'll go, remember when Greg Monroe was on the Timberwolves?
Right.
Like I hope not. I have enjoyed the Greg Monroe thing, but I think that will kind of prove to be futile. I don't think Nathan Knight is going to play above Naz Reid. And I think he'll play in games at a time when Kat's hurt or Naz Reid is hurt in the future. A lot of these other things will prove to be, you know, somewhat irrelevant, but I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. That's what this is. This is me guessing. It's watching. It's trying to figure it out and hope that the Wolves get some wins along the way of these 2 weeks, so that they are at a place when the roster's back together that they're not that far away from 500.
Exactly.
So when we're back rolling, we can be like, all right, here's the 9-man rotation. Here's 10 games with the team back. They've gone 6-4. They're back in it. Like that. That's all you're trying to get to. You're trying to get to 3 weeks from now and be at that point. That's
You don't want the COVID roadkill to be like a 1-7 time when everybody, you know, right now they're 1-3. You know, I don't want to have them keep losing without, you know, it's one thing if you have one starter out, because that's typical of an injury, you know.
Sure.
Even two starters, you could say, oh, bad luck. But five starters, four starters, three starters, what we've seen since the Dallas game is this is all you're trying to do is.
It's preseason, man. It's preseason.
But unfortunately, they count. So you're trying to tread water, you know. You're just trying to tread water. You don't want to go 1-7 and miss out on a playoff spot by like two games. Because if you went 3-5, you'd be in there, you know what I mean? You know, in meaningless games, you know. So that's the part that I went on my Twitter rant about the NBA needing to shorten season the other week with that kind of thing in mind, is I just don't think, I call it, you know, roulette competition. You put your ball in and hope it pops into the right hole.
I'm interested to see how long it takes this team to rebound, and I have no idea. I have no idea how
Pat Bev is any indication.
And it's going to be other teams in the league too. Other teams are having guys back. Like if the Wolves are going to struggle the rebound, the Atlanta Hawks are going to struggle the rebound too, or the Chicago Bulls, or the Lakers, the Mavs. These other teams have been ravaged.
I think that's going to be almost as defining here in the next 3 weeks is how Anthony Edwards can come back, and everyone, D'Lo Cat, can come back as whatever this 1-3 stretch has ended up being. But I have no opinions on that. I have no idea what it's going to look like, and we're going to have to see. But Britt, I appreciate you doing this today. You have no column this week, correct?
Correct. MinPost is on vacation, which is fine with
MinPost. Yeah, right. You'll be back in the new year writing something there, I'm sure, maybe beginning of next week in January. I will be off here for a few days too, but I think we'll do another some sort of cliche Timberwolves New Year's resolutions sort of podcast at some point here.
I'll have fun with it.
Yeah, we'll make it work. He's Britt Robson. Follow him on Twitter at Britt Robson. Read his stuff at MinPost. I'm Dane Moore at Dane Moore NBA on Twitter. And we'll talk to you soon. Until then, peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.